know any younger people who actually watch TV rather than stream the internet? A new TV boosting strategy launches today. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Vice, perhaps best known for its streaming digital content, is launching a new cable TV channel today. A channel, old school, designed to be watched on TV through a cable or satellite plan. Marketplace's Adrian Hill reports.
Viceland takes over A&E's Channel H2 today. H2 was an underperforming spinoff of the History Channel. Viceland will roll out shows with names like Gaycation, Weedekit, and at least a couple Common Decency Prevents Me from saying on the radio. Brian Lowry is the TV critic at Variety.
It looks like current TV on steroids.
Think edgy, jumpy, documentary-style programming. But will Vice's millennial audience watch cable television the old-fashioned way? Richard Greenfield is a media analyst at BTIG.
In the scheme of Vice, it's a small bet.
Vice didn't spend millions to buy a channel. It's not building it from scratch, scrambling for subscribers.
This is a media company, A&E, saying, here's a channel, let's rebrand it, we'll split it with you, and let's build this together.
Around 75% of millennial households have cable, a big source of ad revenue if Viceland can pull them in. I'm Adrian Hill for Marketplace.
The stock market was mixed in early trading. Two key themes on the minds of market participants today. One is China telling the Group of 20 meeting the other day that it doesn't want its currency to keep falling. Indeed, the yuan is up 0.2% to the dollar now. That's also the result of China today helping its banks to lend more domestically. Another theme is the sense that the U.S. economy is doing better than expected, given signs of inflation on Friday. Let's bring in Susan Schmidt, an economist and senior vice president and portfolio manager at Westwood Group in Dallas.
I think as we began the year, it became an initial conclusion that, well, they won't raise rates in March, but they'll probably do something later. But it really feels as if the majority opinion swung to they won't raise rates again at all in the rest of 2016. We would have seen the December rate raise and that was it. And for 2016, they'll be flat. So I think we were really in that mindset through most of February. And I think the data Friday gives the Fed options and makes the market at least step back and realize that they can't race in front of this. They're going to have to wait and actually view the data.
And if we step away from this world of interest rates, you know, we're also saying that the underlying economy is not quite as bad as those folks were thinking.
That's exactly right, because if we see a little strength in that inflation number, it means that there is pricing support, and so things are getting a little bit better. We are seeing that in the jobs data. We're seeing a gradual creep in the average hourly earnings, and so there are some pinpoints of bright light out there that say that things are actually okay, but of course, you know, the market doesn't like things in the middle. They can't handle that. They have to be at one extreme or the other. And so it's very difficult for professional investors to operate in this environment when things are just going along.
Susan Schmidt is an economist and is senior vice president and portfolio manager at Westwood Group in Texas. Susan, thank you.
Thank you.
The Best Picture Award at the Oscars last night went to Spotlight, putting the spotlight back on the Catholic Church sex abuse scandal. As it happens, the Vatican's finance chief right now is in the middle of testimony to a royal commission in Australia about institutional responses to abuse by priests in that country. Cardinal George Pell is an Australian, and as the person tapped by Pope Francis to reform the Vatican's finances, is one of the most powerful people in the church. He's testifying by video link, and because of the time change with Australia, the live questioning was in the middle of the night, Rome time. Stephanie Kirschgassner, Rome correspondent for The Guardian newspaper, has been covering this.
We heard last night for the first time was that he acknowledged he did in fact hear rumors every now and then. What we're hearing is that he wasn't necessarily pursuing those rumors. He acknowledges he wasn't really looking for more information.
Now, this is a royal commission looking into institutional responses, but you noted this statement by Cardinal Pell, quote, "I think the faults overwhelmingly have been more personal faults, personal failures rather than structures," unquote. So it's largely not an institutional failure?
Yes, and I think this is what we see from the Catholic Church to this day, is that, you know, when you talk to church officials about the history of abuse, some would say ongoing problem of abuse, that this is a problem in society in general, that obviously it's been exposed in the church. In that sense, the church is no different than any other group, whether it's in schools or families.
It's interesting, but normally when a large organization is trying to evaluate itself after a crisis. It looks for structural reasons that contributed to the crisis. And that's an interesting quote in light of that.
He did acknowledge that the church's handling was catastrophic. And I think for anyone who knows George Pell, he is a very tough man. To hear a much more reflective George Pell, some people think, you know, this is potentially a little bit of an image that he's trying to portray, but we haven't necessarily seen the commission come out with any really hardball questions trying to drill down on what exactly he knew and what he didn't know.
So this video testimony from Rome to Australia will continue?
It'll be starting at 10 p.m. Rome time again tonight, and will likely go through to Wednesday.
Stephanie Kirsch-Gassner is Rome correspondent for The Guardian newspaper. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
In economics, the phrase animal spirits refers to the emotions and tendencies that guide our behavior. But now to a different kind of animal economics. It's a piece about the Alaska Zoo trying to raise extra money in its off-season by charging people for special privileges like feeding a snow leopard or a pack of wolves. Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports.
Zookeeper Timothy Lesher splits a side of caribou ribs with a handsaw.
I think we got probably 9 pieces here.
Lesher stuffs assorted chunks of carcass into a trash bag and gets ready to toss piece after piece over the fence to a hungry pack of wolves.
It's delicious, doesn't it?
That moose scapula?
Yes. The wolves, they like everything.
Lesher is giving me a behind-the-scenes tour of the zoo as part of a special program called Keeper for a Day. For $200 a person, you shadow the zookeepers for a few hours, getting up close with everything from wolves to yaks. This is just one of the zoo's eclectic hodgepodge of revenue streams. Jill Meyer is the zoo's development director. She runs down some of the zoo's expenses.
$125,000 a year. That's just to basically care for the animals.
But the biggest overhead costs are paying for the keepers and other staff. And Meyer says there are a couple of factors that make funding a subarctic zoo a little, well, let's say unique. Most of the money comes from admissions during the summer, when tour buses and cruise ships unleash a steady torrent of visitors eager to glimpse polar bears and snow leopards. The zoo even extends its hours.
It's Alaska and there's light, you know, and everybody, you can come to the zoo in the middle of the night and there's animals still up and roaming around.
But the winters, when the zoo's cold weather creatures tend to be a lot more out and about, they're not the only ones. The keepers have more time, too. Bears are hibernating, the hours are reduced, and there are fewer visitors wandering around. Leveraging staff to get more enthusiastic patrons to spend on cool experiences isn't unique to the zoo. Anne Hale directs development at the Anchorage Museum and has more than 2 decades of experience funding nonprofits across Alaska.
Because the economy here is reliant on summer tourism, it may be more unique for us than it is in other states or communities.
Hale says nonprofits here plan accordingly for the non-tourist season, which in Alaska runs September through mid-May. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes for Marketplace.
And famed investor Warren Buffett is out with his annual letter to Berkshire Hathaway shareholders. He likes to strike a folksy tone in these things. This year, he's trying to counter the view among some presidential candidates that the U.S. is going somewhere fast in a handbasket. What he called a negative drumbeat has led many Americans to believe their children will not live as well as their parents. Buffett thinks that view is wrong and that babies born today are, quote, the luckiest crop in history. Buffett, who likes Hillary Clinton for president, is trying to be a kind of counterweight to Republican businessman Donald Trump. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.